We're going to call the meeting to order of the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. Bree, would you please call the roll?
Senator Aquino. Representative Davidsmeyer. Senator DeWitt. Representative Harper. Representative Hernandez.
Here.
Senator Kaler.
Here.
Representative McLaughlin. Representative Moeller. Senator Sims.
Present.
Representative Sosnowski. Senator Stoler.
Here.
Senator Severson. 5 present.
And please add Senator Aquino to the roll. Today we have, and welcome to the new members of the COGFA. So, how many new members do we have? When?
Are you back again?
Back again, right. So, I think we have an interesting presentation this morning. So, we have Clayton, why don't you kick it off first?
Thank you, Coach. There we go. My name is Clayton Klanke. I am the Executive Director of the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. First, I did want to welcome back our co-chairs. We have Senator Kaler and Representative Davidsmeyer as our co-chairs again for the 103rd General Assembly, and joined on the Senate side by Senator Stoler, and on the House side with Representative McLaughlin and returning member Sosnowski. So welcome to you all. This meeting today, of course, is our annual revenue meeting. During this meeting, we'll be presenting a revised FY23 revenue estimate and our initial estimate for FY24. The last couple of years have presented some interesting dynamics for revenue forecasting, from the COVID-related economic slowdowns and the related recovery, and also numerous tax policy changes at both the federal and state level. There have been many wild cards that we have encountered through the economic and revenue forecasting process. Our presentation today will highlight some of the ups and downs that we've seen. We have a little bit of good news in the presentation, and also some potential concerns that we'll talk about future economic performance. Our PowerPoint today is organized into an initial section that relates to economic variables and forecasting, and a second section then that actually looks at the actual state revenue performance and our revenue estimates. So at this time, I will turn the microphone over to Ben Varner. He is the chief economist at COGFA, and he will go over the economic slide portion of our presentation. And then after that, Eric Noggle, who is the revenue unit manager at COGFA, will handle the second half of the presentation that deals with the actual revenue estimates. So, Ben.
Thank you, Clayton. As Clayton said, my name is Ben Varner. I'm the chief economist at COGFA. I'm going to go over some economic indicators that we track in putting together our estimates. The first slide shows real gross domestic product. This is a comprehensive measure of U.S. economic activity that measures the value of final goods and services produced in the United States adjusted for inflation. GDP basically is about a little under 70% personal consumption, 18% business investment and housing investment, 18% government, and then net exports actually subtracts a little. As you can see on the chart we had large declines with the outbreak of COVID, and with a large rebound in 2021. We saw good growth, about 7% for most of the year, a slight decline due to the Delta variant. However, in the first half of 2022, we actually had some contraction. The first quarter, we were down 1.6% due to the Omicron variant and net exports dragging down GDP, whereas the second quarter, changes in inventory and the beginning of the housing slowdown subtracted about 0.6%. However, in the second half of 2022, we returned to growth, 3.2% with improvements in net exports, and the fourth quarter was up 2.7%, based on private inventory investment and continued consumer spending. Now, overall, consumer spending has remained solid. We saw a slight slowdown in the November-December timeframe, but once again, we saw a jump in January. Economists are currently forecasting real GDP growth of only 0.7% for 2023 and 1.1% for 2024. We'll talk about this later, but many economists are expecting a recession of some sort in 2023. Looking at one of the main issues in the economy right now is inflation. The second slide shows the Consumer Price Index, which basically measures the average change over time in the prices paid by urban consumers for a market basket of consumer goods and services. Basically, what we've seen over the last 2 years is a rise in inflation. Now, this was due to increased levels of demand. Coming out of the COVID period, we saw healthy household balance sheets supported by government payments supporting demand. And at the same time, we've had supply chain issues related both with the virus itself keeping workers out of work, plus the war in Ukraine affecting the supply of energy products and food. So basically, inflation took off in April of 21. We likely saw a peak over the summer last year. CPI reached a high of 9.1% in June of 2022, while the core CPI, which takes out two of the more volatile components in food and energy, grew to 6.6% in September of 2022. Since then, we've seen some declines. In January, the inflation rates were at 6.4% for the headline CPI and 5.6% for the core. However, we did see we still slowed down, but it was a little higher than expected. So obviously this is still an issue, and the Federal Reserve is taking steps to try to slow down the economy and slow down inflation. Current expectations are for inflation to continue to slow over the coming year, but it's going to remain above where the Federal Reserve wants it. The next slide shows some historical CPI, just basically total inflation by decades. As you can see here, the 2020s, we're off to a pretty high start, and what we're trying to avoid is what you see in the 1970s, basically a decade-long period of high levels of inflation. We don't want that to happen. So one of the things you've probably heard about is the Federal Reserve's tightening monetary policy. Basically, last spring, the Federal Reserve started increasing short-term interest rates. Basically, they did this to fight inflation, cool off an overheating economy, and to better align a tight labor market. By raising short-term interest rates, the cost of borrowing increases, which lowers demand for high-ticket items such as housing, autos, and other things, which can eventually lead to lower employment. So far, we've seen 7 increases, and we're expecting more in 2023. Mortgage rates have gone as high as over 7% for a 30-year, and the 10-year treasury was over 4%. Recently, we've seen some declines or a little lower levels as policy loosened up. This wasn't the Fed. This was just the market sort of seeing, oh, maybe we're going to see some declines later in the year. But hot employment numbers and CPI numbers have led to the Fed indicating there are going to be more increases and they're probably going to last longer. The hope for is a soft landing, which would be a decrease in inflation with minimal impact on activity, especially jobs. We'll see how well that works. The next slide shows the Treasury yield curve. On the far left, you see where we were about a little less than a year ago. This looks like a more healthy yield curve. Basically, short-term rates are lower than long-term rates. However, as the increases in short-term rates have taken hold, we've seen a compression of the curve and an inversion of the curve. Now, this in the past has been seen as a indicator of recession in the near future. An inversion is where longer-term rates are lower than short-term rates. The question remains right now, basically, how high will the Fed go? How long will they stay there? And when will they begin loosening policy? As I said before, the market was indicating that they thought they were going to start loosening before the end of 2023. Based on the most recent data we've seen in January, now we're thinking it's going to last longer, they're going to go a little higher, and it's going to be more like 2024 before they start loosening policy. The next slide shows the Purchasing Managers Index for the manufacturing sector. This is a index of the overall health of the manufacturing sector, basically a value of over 50 equals expansion, a value below 50 equals contractions. They look at new orders, inventory levels, production, supplier deliveries, and the employment environment. As you can see here, at the outbreak of the pandemic, we saw a big decline, and then we've seen many, many months of expansion. However, we've seen since November, we went negative or below 50% for the U.S., and the Chicago area index has been showing contraction for 6 months. Now, fortunately, we haven't really seen any of this gone to Illinois' manufacturing sector employment yet. It's still pretty strong, so far we haven't really seen the job effects on that. Softening demand in the first half of 2023 is an ongoing concern, but some manufacturers are keeping busy working down backlogs of orders that build up during the pandemic. The next slide shows the services PMI. It's a similar index for the much larger service sector. Basically, after the initial downbeat for the beginning of the pandemic, we've seen exceedingly high levels of growth, basically went to an all-time high in November of 2021, but most of 2022 we saw we were more in the mid-50s with a downward slope. In December we actually went below 50, but then in January and February we bounced back up to about 55. So I don't know if that's just an aberration or what that is, but looking at the anecdotal stories behind this survey, there's still some issues related to elevated prices for some of their inputs, but otherwise it's looking pretty good with firming demand. The one big thing, the next slide shows United States employment. We've had very strong growth. We lost between 22 and 26 million jobs in April of 2020 due to the pandemic. We've had very strong growth since then. We were, based on the establishment survey, which is the payroll survey, we made up our jobs in 28 months versus 76 months after the Great Recession. So we've had a much more V-shaped rebound. We were up 4.8 million jobs in 22, which is very strong growth. Despite this large growth, we've seen some slowing since about the spring of 2022. The next slide shows that between January of 21 and February of 22, we averaged 553,000 payroll jobs per month. Since about the spring, though, we've seen a definite slowdown. Over the last 5 months of 2022, we averaged 315,000 jobs. Now, while that's significantly lower than the 553,000 we have, this is still a very high rate. Between 2011 and 2019, during the last expansion, we averaged 194,000 jobs per month. And as you can see, the last data point there, we popped up to a 517,000. Now, any 1 month, you probably don't want to read too much into, but as you can see, we've still had decent job growth. One of the things the Fed's trying to do is somewhat slow this rate. The tight labor market can lead to higher inflation with higher wages. Fed Chairman Powell has noted that the country needs approximately 100,000 new jobs per month to keep up the population growth. So some people have thought that, you know, they're looking for more like 100,000, 150,000, somewhere in there is where they'd prefer to be. Obviously, they don't want people to lose jobs, but they do want to get inflation under control. The next slide shows unemployment insurance claims. This is one way we track how tight the labor market is here. As you can see here, unemployment insurance claims data indicates the market remains tight. Initial unemployment claims remain near all-time lows, whereas continuing claims have risen a little since the last summer, but they still remain at historically low levels. This is also backed up by job posting data and like the quit rate and things like that. The market is still tight. Looking at Illinois employment, we have not done quite as well. We lost between 769,000 and 895 jobs, depending on which survey you looked at, but we have not rebounded quite as well. We've made up quite a bit of it, but we still remain 43,000 to 163,000 jobs below where we were in February of 2020. One thing we've noticed in the last couple months is some weakness in the household survey. Since August of 2022, we've sort of been on a downturn there. Now, if you look at the time period in 2010, 2011, we've had some similar downturns, but the establishment survey, which is payroll-based, continued going on. But it is something we're keeping an eye on, and the weakness really hasn't been quite as evident in the establishment survey yet, but we're still waiting for the January data. The unemployment rate is another area where we've lagged the country as a whole. Throughout the last decade, we've had a gap between our unemployment rate and the U.S. as a whole. This usually ranged between a half percentage point to a full percentage point throughout most of the 2010s. Right, just prior to the outbreak of the pandemic, we actually were below. We'd closed the gap and we were below them. However, unfortunately, once the big jump associated with the outbreak came to, the gap has basically returned. As of December, the U.S. unemployment rate was at 3.5%, while the Illinois rate was at 4.7%. The U.S. rate fell to 3.4% in January, which is the lowest rate since the late 1960s. So, overall, pretty strong job market at the moment, maybe a little too good, a little too tight. Looking at income, we have disposable personal income per capita. Basically, this is income after current taxes are paid. As you can see, in the current dollar and inflation-adjusted dollar marks, we had some big jumps associated with the COVID payments. People were receiving those payments, and it jumped up their income. However, as some people have noted, the inflation-adjusted one has actually been going down. So throughout 21 and 22, with increasing inflation rates, our real disposable income was going down. However, similar to current level dollar income, we've been starting to climb back up as inflation has abated somewhat. Looking at individual wage quartiles, there's a story to be told here. Basically, what we've seen over the last few years is the lower wage earners have held up better against inflation than the higher wage earners. Basically, we've seen over the last few years that the lowest quartile has been gaining or growing a little bit faster than the rest of wage earners. This is associated with increases in minimum wage and the tight labor market. Currently, their growth was about 7%, both the lowest quartile and the second quartile. The higher wage earners, the third and fourth quartile, have seen some growth also, but they're more in the 5% or 6% range. Looking at retail sales, this is one of the items we look at related to like sales tax. As you can see, we saw a big decline initially with the outbreak of COVID, but then we've seen a big jump in demand for retail items. This is, like I said, associated with healthy household balances and a turn away from services that weren't available at that time. Current dollar sales continue to grow, but similar to income, inflation adjusted, it's been basically flat for the last year and a half or so. The final economic indicator we look at is average employment levels by subsector in Illinois and average weekly earnings by subsector in Illinois. Now, this helps us with income tax forecasting. One of the things we'll point out here is the strong level we've seen in construction. One of the things we've been worried about is with the downturn in the housing market is construction jobs. Are they going to go away? Well, so far, we haven't seen that. Basically, we were up about 9% compared to where we were during the average of fiscal year 2022. Some of this we think is related to, instead of new housing, we're starting to see remodeling and a potential growth in the non-residential side. But that's one of the things that I think is helping the markets or jobs stay high, is we're not seeing a decline in construction that you might think would be happening with higher mortgage rates. Also, we've seen good growth in the leisure and hospitality market. This is the sector that got hit the worst during COVID. However, we still remain below where we were in 2019. Then we had about 620,000 jobs. Now we're about more 595,000, though we still seen good growth. Overall, we've seen strong growth over the last 2 years. We are 4% for fiscal year 2022, and we're at 3.1% for fiscal year 2023 so far. Looking at earnings, we've seen strong growth since about 2019. We've been over 4% all these years. We were at 5.8% in fiscal year 2021 and 4.1% in 2022. So far, it looks like we might be a little slowdown in our earnings so far in fiscal year 23. But like I said, this is one of the things we look at to look at our income taxes. Basically, last year we had about 4% growth in jobs and 4% growth in earnings. That you add those two together, it's about 8%, and that's what similar to what we saw in income taxes. Next, we're going to go over some economic forecasts we look at. Volatility still remains high, but the situation seems to be improving. COVID doesn't seem to be quite as big of a issue, you know, with the different variants shutting down production and so on. Monetary tightening, trying to get inflation under control is still a big issue, and how much that's going to affect the economy. We still probably haven't seen the full effects of the housing slowdown. The war in Ukraine can have some effects on our supply of energy and food, and that can definitely lead to higher prices, and just other economies around the world potentially falling into recession. One of the big concerns was Europe falling into recession. It's still highly likely that it will, but we've seen an improvement with the energy price situation not as bad as they thought it was going to be with a warmer than normal winter. Looking at the first group of forecasts, it's called the consensus forecast. It's just a group of about 25 to 30 monthly estimates that they aggregate. As I said before, real GDP is expected to be at 0.7%, while NEC 2024 is 1.1%. They believe consumer prices are going to continue to be high, about 3.9%, but cooling to about 2.5%. Now, this is getting closer to where we want to be related to the Fed. As you see here, like, housing starts are going to remain very minimal in 2023 with a little improvement in 2024. As I said before, one of the main things right now is most economists are still forecasting some kind of slowdown in 23 and 24. I think we're potentially seeing a, how should I say, a pushing off of this. I'll go over the IHS market or the S&P Global forecast next, and they're expecting a mild recession start this quarter. So far, we're just not really seeing that. Looking at our income tax data and our sales tax data and the jobs numbers, it really hasn't been in the data yet. Now, tax receipts obviously probably lag economic activity a little, but so far, we think the slowdown is probably going to be a little later in the year than some people are thinking. Looking at the S&P Global, formerly IHS Markit's expectation, they have a baseline scenario with a 55% chance of occurrence. It's calls for a mild recession starting in the first quarter of 2023. Real GDP is forecast to fall 1.3% in the first quarter and 0.2% in the second quarter. A relatively weak recovery will take hold in the third quarter of the year. Excuse me. A more pessimistic scenario they have is a 25% chance of probability, has a more deeper recession lasting three quarters due to weaker consumer spending and intensification of war in Ukraine. Finally, they have a 20% likely optimistic scenario where stronger growth in consumer spending and stronger productivity relative to the baseline leads to small but positive growth in both 2023 and 2024. That's basically all I have. Like I said, I think we're sort of seeing the slowdown happening a little later in the year and not really affecting FY23 receipts quite as much as maybe some other people do. Now I'll turn it over to Eric Noggle to talk about the tax revenue estimates.
Can we ask some questions first? Sure. And please add Senator Severson to the roll. Yes, Senator Severson.
Sure, a couple quick questions. On page 10, the manufacturing, and I think you had highlighted that when you talked a little bit about the that these numbers are a little bit concerning, but more concerning is when we talk to manufacturers, they're just now completing all the backlogs that they had. But when I talk to them, when that backlog ends, they talk about they have no work coming up. So are we going to see potentially a much bigger cliff when
potential.
That happens?
Like I said, I haven't personally talked to manufacturers, but reading the manufacturing PMIs and anecdotes related to that, some manufacturers did have some backlog to still continue to work through, but it definitely is a concern. If you're not seeing new demand, you're not going to be able to keep your payrolls and so on and so forth. So it's definitely an issue. As I said, we haven't really seen it in the jobs data yet. We're still holding on pretty strong there. So, but it's definitely a concern, and we are watching that.
And the biggest concern with manufacturing, which is the same with construction, is just that macro economic of it, manufacturing, that dollar is turned so many more times because you have suppliers and then suppliers of the suppliers. And unlike retail, manufacturing has a, when that
definitely
drops, it has a trailer effect that's
yes,
much more global than what other types
yes
are.
Yes, I mean, definitely it's issues. But we have, I mean, we start seeing some more strength in the service sector. But yes, it's definitely an issue we've been looking at and continue to look at.
One other quick question. On the on page 15, we talked about, you mentioned the Illinois unemployment, that we're still 43,000 or something below where we were. And yet then on page 20, we're talking about the annual jobs growth on those charts. Looks like the numbers are going, when I look at 2020 versus 23, it looks like the numbers are much, are higher, not...
Well, these are averages, so I think what you're seeing there is our previous peak was at a certain point right before the pandemic, and so the average maybe not be. I'll have to look into that exactly. I see what you're saying.
Because it looks like from 20 to, it goes from 5.9 to 6.1.
Yeah.
That's a 200, looks like a 200,000 growth, and yet we're talking
well,
about...
Well, if you look at the FY19, we're at 6.11 there. So I think it might just have to do with...
But even that's a wash then, as opposed
yes
to 43,000.
Yes, like I said, we've gotten close, and I think what you're seeing there maybe is just the averaging out of those. No, it's still the same. It's the establishment survey. I'll take a look at that and get back to you, but I
okay,
believe
if you would,
what
I appreciate
you're seeing
that
there is we had a certain peak, but these are averages, so that's sort of, you know, dampening the effect.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? I've got just one. So Illinois' unemployment rate is a little bit higher than the rest of the country, but everybody I talk to just cannot find workers. Does that indicate that we have a skills gap?
There definitely probably is some misalignment. I don't know if we call it the skills gap, but there is definitely matching up people to certain jobs. I don't know how far in that, but definitely there. I mean, we've definitely been trailed the rest of the country when it comes to this. We have one of the highest unemployment rates. I don't know exactly how, if you have a skills gap there or what, but there definitely is issues compared to the rest of the country.
Okay. So, no other questions? Yep. I'm sorry. Senator Sims.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to stay there for a second, Ben, because Chairman Kaler mentioned something that I'm concerned about. You're saying our unemployment's high, but we are not finding individuals who can find workers, then where's that disconnect? So I guess I'm trying to understand where the disconnect is between the workers and the inability to fill the jobs.
I probably don't have the greatest answer for that. Jobs seem to be available based on postings and stuff. I don't know if there's a pay issue or other issues related to maybe daycare or having to take care of somebody who's sick or something. I mean, we still do have issues with long COVID and stuff. So I don't really have the greatest answer for that.
Okay. Ben, have you looked at and compared Illinois' recovery to other states of similar size and demographic backgrounds and economic backgrounds?
Basically, the data I've looking at some different variables, we seem to lag a little at the beginning of the pandemic, but we performed a little better later on. So that's sort of where we've been. We're probably pretty similar to other, but like I said, I think we lagged a little at the beginning, and then we've done better during the second half, or whatever you want to call the last year or two.
What would you attribute that recovery or that rebound to on the back end for us?
Potentially us maybe holding on to our health mitigation efforts a little longer, potentially. I don't know exactly what it'd be, but that's maybe my first area I'd look at. But I won't lie to you, I haven't really thought about it that much.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That'd be great to see. I'd love this. Maybe we could do a regional with Ohio and Michigan, Indiana. Just do a... instead of a nationwide, do an industrial Midwest comparison. That would be an interesting chart to see if you could do that for the whole committee. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Senator Sampson, I can just add to it. I toured Illinois Central College vocational training yesterday, and they showed, you know, diesel mechanics and IT people and folks that have high skill and high paid jobs, and they are getting jobs right out the door. On the other hand, they're trying to do more training in terms of daycare workers, and they can't get enough people in because the wages are so low. So part of that is that you know, we've got to see some job areas increase their wages to be able to attract people. So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and it's ironic you talk about that issue in particular. There was a story on NPR just this morning talking about the gap in teachers. And there are folks and teachers who are leaving the profession because of the demands on them, but also on the lack of, on the low pay. And I know legislative, we have done some work to try to increase that, but I think this is a bigger problem that we are seeing in our economy overall. And Ben, I think you've confirmed some of these things for me, that the policies that we're trying to implement, they're having an impact, they're having a good impact, but we've still got a lot of work to do.
Everybody good? All right. Take it away, Ben.
My name is Eric Noggle, and I'm the revenue manager of the commission, and I'll be going over the general fund's revenue estimates for us today. I'm going to start on page 25, and this is just the initial look of what revenues look like when the enacted budget was put together. This assumed revenues of $46.4 billion. And so we go on to page 26. You can see this revenue categorized and how it compared to fiscal year 22. You can see that fiscal year 22 ended up really strong at the end of fiscal year 22 due to income tax revenues coming in, especially strong at the end of the year. And so compared to 22, we could have a fall off of $4.6 billion and still reach the enacted budget revenue number of $46.4 billion. So how are we doing? Look at page 27. We've actually done just the opposite. We've continued to grow instead of having a deficit so far this fiscal year. The graph on page 27 shows the monthly general fund's performance. And we look at it in three different ways. The blue there shows how we're doing from state sources only. The white would be if you include federal sources to that number. And then the gray would include any one-time revenues that you have. And that would include, in this particular fiscal year, ARPA reimbursement funds. And you can see in every single month so far this fiscal year, we've actually had a gain where we've generated more revenues in this fiscal year compared to the same time a year ago. So in July, up $395, August, $435 million, all the way down the line to the latest numbers we have, growth of $248 million above last January, and February up $256 million compared to the previous February. So in total, we are up $2.539 billion through February compared to last fiscal year. You turn to page 28, you can see where we're seeing this growth on an individual basis. A lot of what we're seeing is through all the economically tied sources, like personal income tax, up 4.4% for the year, or up $717 million. Now, on a net basis, when you subtract out money that's set aside for the refund fund or local government distributed fund, that growth slows a little bit to $596 million, which you can see in the table below on page 29. But that's still a growth of 4.3%. Corporate income tax revenues have been exceptional this year. We expected originally that there would be some kind of slowdown because they were so strong in fiscal year 22. That really hasn't happened yet. Up $618 million on a gross basis, or $508 million net. Sales tax revenues, while the number of goods being sold may have slowed, the increased prices due to inflation have allowed sales tax revenues to continue to come in very strong, up 7.5%. That's growth of $537 million on a gross basis. When you subtract out some non-general fund distributions, such as there's more money being set aside for the road fund, the net growth that we see for sales tax is $242 million. Then we have a bunch of other state sources. I'm not going to go through them all, but one thing I do want to point out, you'll see a huge growth percentage there on page 28, interest on state funds and investments. At this point last year, we had $9 million come in. We are already up to $204 million, and that, of course, is directly related to all the rate increases that we've had from the Federal Reserve for interest rates. And so you're seeing the direct correlation for that here. The other thing that's going to pop out there is the growth that we see in transfers in. Specifically, the refund fund transfer. So any amounts that's left in the income tax refund fund at the end of the fiscal year are then transferred into the state's general funds the following fiscal year. Normally, that amount is around $200 to $300 million. This past fiscal year, because income tax revenues were so strong, we had nearly $1.5 billion come in. So that's an increase of $1.2 billion compared to last year. This is not something we're going to count on to keep coming in. We see this more as a one-time experience. And then we'll go down to federal sources. They're the one source that's probably been lacking a little bit this year so far, and this is base federal sources. We are $496 million below where we were at this point last year for federal sources. The other line I want to point out is the ARPA reimbursement for essential government services. Again, this is money that the federal government has been giving states to reimburse them for expenses related to COVID-19. Originally, $1.5 billion was expected to be received from that. All of that was expected to be received in fiscal year 22, but some of that trickled into 23, which we had not budgeted for. We assumed it was going to be coming into 22. So we have received $764 million in 23. More than we expected. So we could turn to page 30. So as compared to fiscal year 22 actuals, fiscal year 23 began the year to absorb a $4.6 billion fall off in revenues to reach the enacted budget. Given the fiscal year to date growth of $2.5 billion, we could fall around $7.1 billion over the remaining months of fiscal year 23 and still reach this assumed revenues for the budget. Now, of course, this level of fall off is not likely. In other words, we're doing quite well for fiscal year 23. Now, while inflation has no doubt been a concern, it actually has helped tax revenues from the standpoint that it increased sales tax revenues because of the higher prices. It has put pressure on increasing wages, and that has meant higher income tax revenues. And then, as I talked about before, the interest income is a lot higher because of the higher interest rates. The rest of this page, we're talking about what I've already discussed, the increase in transfers in and the ARPA reimbursement money that we have already received. On page 31, we knew a lot of this stuff was going to happen, and so back in November, we increased our revenue estimate above the enacted budget assumed revenues. We increased our estimate by $4.9 billion to $51.3 billion. In November, the governor's office also increased their budget, but they didn't go as high as us. They went up to $50.1 billion. So our November number was $1.2 billion above them. We turn to page 33. As I mentioned in the November 22 presentation, the commission stated it was possible that we would follow up with an additional increase in March if any semblance of the then current pace of revenue growth continued. And now, while the pace has slowed somewhat from these prior levels, when incorporating the revenues that we've already received with the expectation of continued growth in many of these sources, albeit lessened, the numbers indicate that another moderate modest increase in the fiscal year 23 revenue outlook is warranted. The largest unknown that we have remaining in fiscal year 23 has to do with final payments. We really don't know what that's going to look like. Final payments were especially strong in fiscal year 23 because of the above average capital gains that came in due to strong market conditions of tax year 21. The market conditions have been not as strong in tax year 2022. So we're anticipating final income tax payments to drop during this last quarter of fiscal year 23. But we still have had strong wages. We've had strong personal income come in. And so we think that they're going to offset each other a little bit. The question is, how much is there going to be a decline in the remainder of fiscal year 23? So that probably won't be clear until the April figures come in and are finalized. So with that in mind, and being conservative because of that factor that we might have some declining revenues coming the rest of the fiscal year, here is our estimate for our revision for fiscal year 23. You can see that we are increasing our estimate by $575 million to $51.9 billion. This figure is $5.475 billion above the fiscal year 23 enacted budget's assumed revenue figure of $46.4 billion. We're seeing growth in, you can see the where we're seeing the growth in our estimate. We're increasing it by $242 million for personal, $467 million for corporate. This is on a net basis. Sales tax revenues, we're increasing it by $130 million. All the other state sources, we're increasing it $103 million. A lot of that has to do with the interest income that we've had come in. But we're seeing a little slowdown in transfers in. We're not as optimistic for that, so we're lowering it there. And the federal source numbers, because we generally take GOMB's number for federal sources because it's tied to spending, but we think it's going to be very difficult for us to reach that $4 billion mark that was originally expected. So we're going to lower our estimate there by $250 million to $3.75 billion. Again, you see the ARPA reimbursement that we did receive. So the bottom line is that we are increasing our estimate by $575 million for fiscal year 23. You can see the details behind that estimate on page 34 there for you to look at. So the question is, how does that number compare to GOMB? On page 35, you can see that they recently included their numbers in their budget book for fiscal year 24. Their fiscal year 23 revision is $51.359 billion. And we are, again, at 51.9, so we are actually $545 million above the numbers that GOMB had published in their budget book. Now, I do want to point out that we did have the luxury of enjoying a very strong February into our numbers. And so I think they probably came out with numbers before they even knew what January was going to come in. So we are able to include both half month of January actuals along with the February actuals that were very good. So that might be a reason why we are $545 million above them in that area. On page 36, you can see just on the detail of where our differences are, I won't go into that right now. On page 37, this is the stuff that we're trying to consider as we go forward to fiscal year 24. As Ben indicated, there's a lot of concern going forward, a lot of uncertainty that still exists. Some of these uncertainties I'm listing out here, one being the COVID-19 variants. Is there going to be a resurgence? Will there be another hit on the economy? Well, obviously we hope that that doesn't occur. We've seen what that COVID-19 can do to the economy, so that's something just to be reason for us to be cautious. Unstable geopolitical environment. The Ukraine-Russia conflict is now over a year old, and it doesn't seem to be ending anytime soon. So we're always concerned with that and how it might affect the world markets. And some economies around the world are continuing to struggle. We are not the only country that's dealing with inflation. And so if the other economies are struggling, then this could affect our world markets as well. Inflation impacts, as the Federal Reserve has continued to try to do steps to lower inflation, the question becomes, how is that going to affect jobs in the short term? Is that going to hit jobs to the point where we're going to be entering into some kind of recession? As Ben mentioned before, S&P Global is saying that there's like a 55% chance in their baseline estimate of some kind of soft recession. They're expecting maybe a 25% chance of a stronger recession. So these are just factors that we have to think about as we look into fiscal year 24 and reasons that we are being a little conservative as we go into our numbers for 24. Let's turn to page 38 and 39. These are just graphs that we constantly look at to see the performance of sales tax revenues. If we start to see sales tax revenues start to fall, that seems to be one of the preliminary signs that the economy or Illinois' revenues may follow. If sales are struggling, then there's going to be maybe some corporate layoffs. If corporate layoffs start to happen, you're going to have lower corporate profits. Those corporate tax revenues will start to go down. They might start letting people go, and that will affect personal income tax revenues. So we watch the sales tax revenue graph quite closely. And while it has had a downward trend, and we're going to continue to watch this, it still is showing growth of around 5 to 10% per year. So it's still stable. But if this continues to fall, this is something that we're concerned about. The graph below on page 39 just shows the monthly year-over-year growth of employment and wages stacked together. Again, we're seeing a little bit of a slowing trend here. It's not to the point that we're concerned. It's hovering still around 4% growth, which is where we're seeing income tax revenues grow right now. But it's something that we're going to keep an eye on, and that downward trend is something that's a little concerning to us. Moving on to page 40, this is our fiscal year 24 outlook. You will see that the Commission estimates that fiscal year 24 general funds revenues will total approximately $50.4 billion. Now, while this figure is nearly $4 billion above the enacted budget number from fiscal year 23 and the assumed revenues, it would be a $1.5 billion decline from where we think fiscal year 23 is going to end up, and that value of $51.9 billion. Now, again, one of the main reasons for that decline from going from 23 into 24 is that we will not have that ARPA reimbursement money anymore, and we do not expect that huge jump in the income tax refund transfer to still be there. So we're removing those two items from our revenue picture for 24. As shown below, the revenue sources by category show mixed results with the overall theme of a slowing of the economically tied revenue sources. General funds revenues from Illinois taxes, when you exclude transfers in and federal sources, are expected to rise only about $233 million in fiscal year 24, an effective growth rate of only 0.5%. Details of this are shown in this table here and on the following page. You see our personal income tax net number, we're increasing our estimate by $479 million, but that's only about a 2% effective growth rate for personal income tax, which is actually very conservative compared. I think GOMB has an estimate of around 3.3%, so we're more conservative than they are there. Corporate income tax revenues, or we're assuming that the corporate strength cannot continue the way it's been going, so we're lowering our revenue estimate for corporate income tax by $235 million. Sales tax revenues, we're slowing that. The net growth is about $47 million. You can see below in the table on page 41 that the growth is around $201 million on a gross basis, but you got to remember that we're putting more and more money from sales tax revenues into the into the road fund, and so you're seeing a net result of a growth of only $47 million for sales tax revenues. All other state sources, we're lowering that number by about $58 million. And transfers in, you can see the big reduction there in the table on page 40, and that's again due to the income tax refund transfer that we do not expect to have the same level of strength. Federal sources, for this number, we're going to go ahead and adopt the governor's office number for federal sources at a little over $4 billion. So that's a growth of $264 million. I probably would be interrupted again, but I'll keep going as much as I can. And then you see the ARPA number there at the bottom of that table on page 40.
May I have your attention, please? A building lockdown is now in effect. No one should enter or exit the building. Please shelter yourself and any visitors or customers in place. Secure your room or area immediately. You will be notified when it is safe to leave your secure area. May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? A building lockdown is now in effect. No one should enter or exit the building. Please shelter yourself and any visitors or customers in place. Secure your room or area immediately. You will be notified when it is safe to leave your secure area. May I please? May I have your attention, please? A building lockdown is...
Should I try? We'll do our best here. So again, the bottom line number is that we are going to lower our estimate. I kind of knew it happened.
A severe weather warning has been issued by the National Weather Service. Please take cover in the lower levels of the building away from exterior windows and doors. Please assist visitors and customers to a safe area. You will be notified when it is safe to return to your work area. May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? A severe weather warning has been issued by the National Weather Service. Please take cover in the lower levels of the building away from exterior windows and doors. Please assist visitors and customers to a safe area. You will be notified when it is safe to return to your work area. May I have your attention, please?
I'm going to try. For the record, can we put on to never schedule a meeting on the first Tuesday of the month?
You may now resume normal operations in the building. An all clear has been issued. It is now safe to return to work. An all clear has been issued for the building. You may now resume normal operations in the building. An all clear has been issued. Is now safe to return to work. And all clear,
Destiny. Yeah, usually they do a final, that this is the last one, but we'll see here. All right. So the bottom line number is that we are lowering our estimate from 23 going into 24 by around $1.5 billion. And you can see the details of that estimate on page 41. So going to 42, this is probably what most of you want to know. So going into page 42, this is where a lot of you probably want to know, how do we compare to the governor's office and their numbers? In the budget book, they came for fiscal year 24, a total of $49.945 billion. We are actually above them at $50.4 billion, or $465 million higher. But there's a significant reason why we are above them. We are starting at a much higher base than them. If you recall what I just mentioned a few minutes ago, that we were had an estimate above them in fiscal year 23. And so we have actually a lesser growth factor going into fiscal year 24 than they have. But because we're starting at a higher base, the result is our revenue estimate for 24 is above them, $465 million above the governor's office. You can see the differences between the two estimates are really not that much. Personal income tax, we're $237 million above them. Corporate income tax, we're actually seeing a little less for 24, $75 below them. Sales tax, a little more optimistic at $178 million. All other state sources, $141 million, but most of that is because of we have a higher number for interest income based on the current levels we are seeing, and really seeing the same things for transfers in, adopting their number for fiscal year 24 for federal sources, and both of us do not anticipate any more money from the ARPA reimbursement. So the bottom line, again, is an increase of $465 million compared to the governor's office. In 43, on page 43, you just see the details behind that figure below. So the bottom line is this. Fiscal year 23 looks very good. It continues to do very well, better than our earlier expectations, and we're expecting that to continue to grow. The big what if has to do with the final payments that I mentioned before. I would love to take a look at the numbers that come in for April and March and April, and then maybe you do a revision in May. The biggest unknown, again, is what I said there, and then we can maybe then have a better idea what fiscal year 24 it looks like in the future based on the performance in fiscal year 23 with final payments. Bottom line for fiscal year 24 is we're only, again, $465 million above the GOMB, but when you're considering this is a budget of $50 billion, that's really a relatively minor difference. So happy to answer any questions you may have.
Yeah, thank you. Please add Representative Harper to the rolls. So it's a little confusing because you talked about initially, and I think maybe Ben, you talked about it, that the calendar year projections were for the last two quarters of 23 to be down.
If you're talking about the S&P Global, they actually have us going into a recession right now. So basically the first two quarters, their baseline estimate was down 1.3% for GDP for this quarter, and I believe 0.6%, I believe, for second quarter.
Okay.
And then we returned to weak growth in the second half.
Oh, really? Okay.
But we're thinking that it's not going to affect tax receipts in 23, we think. It's going to be more of a 24 issue if it does come to pass. We are expecting some kind of slowdown. I don't know if we're going to fall into a recession. And actually, one of the issues we're seeing now is with the high jobs number and high inflation numbers, we might be speeding back up. And that can be an issue where the Fed's going to have to come in when interest rates are. So I think right now what we're seeing is, what we're thinking is tax rates aren't really going to be affected in the first or in rest of 23 with only 4 months left.
So if we come back after the taxes are collected in that, say, end of April or whatever, that gives us a projection of what 22 is about, is it not?
Yeah. The amounts that we're going to see for final payments will be primarily based on the tax year 22 activity. That is correct. But that tax year 22 included some, you know, some market conditions that were not very good. I mean, I think the average S&P drop was around 20% or something like that. And so we would expect some kind of drop in capital gains revenues. But that's just, it's kind of a difficult thing for us to estimate. So you kind of have to wait and see the collections that come in and then kind of respond to what is actually the final payments that you see.
Yeah. Any other questions? Mr. Senate Budgeteer, does this help? It seems like we're doing much better than anybody ever anticipated. I mean, I keep hearing about recession and high inflation and unemployment and all this, and yet our numbers continue to grow, although be it for next year's projection at a much lesser rate. But I guess we just have to keep on doing what we're doing.
Yeah, we keep expecting that slowdown is going to happen, but it just hasn't happened yet.
Knock on wood. So,
3 years ago.
No, when the pandemic hit, we thought the bottom was going to fall out. So, anyway, any other questions or comments from anybody? All right. Well, with that, thank you very much to the staff, and we'll adjourn the meeting.